We're talking about cell phone video of police encounters here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. George Floyd's death in police custody was captured through witness videos. The video of white officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck, a handcuffed black man, for nearly 8 minutes, those images circulated the globe. And in the protests since then, bystander footage has captured police violence toward demonstrators. Have you ever recorded a police encounter with your cell phone? What is the earliest citizen recording of a police incident that you recall? Do you watch police recordings posted on social media? What are your thoughts? It's 800-642-1234. Megan Perry is an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where her research focuses on public perceptions of police misconduct and use of force, as well as the effects of watching these police citizen encounters. Megan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's go way back to Rodney King beating in 1991, which is in history a kind of a pivotal moment of recording this police encounter, this violence. What did you see at that moment that has kind of set the stage for these videos from bystanders?
I think the important thing that came about from the Rodney King encounter was seeing the power of citizen journalism, right? Seeing that an individual picked up what recording equipment that they had and turned it over to the media, and that the media took it and that had an impact. Officers were charged. We saw protests. We saw riots. Not that riots are the outcome that we want to see, but that it had that impact, and that a citizen, a civilian, had that impact.
So nearly 30 years later, where are we with these types of recordings? What impact did they make?
Well, like I said, we're seeing more and more officers who are caught up in instances of misconduct, misuse of force, and things like that. We're seeing them being held accountable because of these videos. The officers are being charged. They're being fired, demoted, things like that. And we're also seeing charges for civilians being dropped because the video evidence may contradict what the officers are saying in their reports happened. And then there's a video evidence that's saying, oh, actually, this is what's happening.
I think it's really important to point out, to clarify, that it is legal for U.S. citizens to record police who are working in their official capacity. Can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been held as a First Amendment, protected under our First Amendment rights, that the courts have held that recording the police and potentially like disseminating that information is important to being able to discuss the government and its workings. And so because of that, we're protected and allowed to film. And there's been some pushback over the years about that from legislatures and from the police, but the courts have come down firmly on the rights of the citizens to do that.
We're talking with Megan Perry. She's an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where she researches the effects of watching these police citizen encounters through video recordings. Do you watch police recordings as they're posted online or on social media? Do you think we should be recording police encounters? What effect do you think they have on police conduct and on the impact of people who watch them? We're at 800-642-1234. Megan, how has social media changed the effect of these videos and their ability to be shared?
Well, social media has been really interesting because it's really upset the power dynamic between, well, a lot of things, but particularly the mainstream or traditional media and the public. It's before that, say with George Holliday, with the recording of the Rodney King incident, he had to take that film, that tape, to the local media station, and they had to decide if they were going to air it or not. With social media now, we can create our videos and share it directly. And now we might only be sharing it with our friends and family or a couple of our followers, or they occasionally might go viral. It might get thousands or millions of views. And so it's really kind of changing that power dynamic where we don't rely on just the traditional news media to get those stories out there. They're not as much of a gatekeeper anymore.
You've watched so many of these videos. What are some of the common threads through them? Are there some common things that you see among these bystander videos?
Well, the ones that go viral in particular, they're going to tend to be violent. And we most often see these videos are there's a racial dynamic, right? So it's the African-American Black citizens who are most often featured in these videos interacting with the police. And so that, I think, is a really interesting piece of these videos. We're not seeing most of the viral videos that get shared around. They're negative, right? They're either the police yelling at somebody, disrespecting somebody, using force, whether or not it's a proper use of force or a misuse of force, excessive force. So generally speaking, these are visceral things, and they're generally what we would categorize as negative. The ones that are going viral are not, for the most part, positive videos where police are being respectful and nonviolent for the most part. So
as you watch these videos, is the bystander who is taking the video, are they saying something? Are they narrating something as they record? Are there any common threads there?
Oftentimes, yeah. When they are commenting, well, there's two different threads, I suppose. We've got the more strict citizen journalist that will just narrate what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see those. And then we'll also see the calling out of officers and questioning, why are you doing that? Trying to get help for the person and really questioning the legitimacy of the interaction.
So, you know, trying to interfere or ask questions as they film this video on their phone. As you watched the Floyd video, what were your takeaways as a researcher?
I was blown away, honestly, by watching this video. It's so different than the other videos we've seen. In terms of violence, it's a violent encounter, but it's not actively violent. And so we just slowly watch somebody expire. We slowly watch the life drain out of somebody on this film. We don't have that in any other video. And the Floyd video is very difficult to even try to rationalize. Oh, well, maybe they were resisting, maybe this was happening, maybe that. This person was handcuffed, as you said, on the ground, and the officer was leaning on their neck, or kneeling on their neck. So it's really difficult to try to spin that any way. And we don't really have videos that are just that straightforward.
Talking with University of Rhode Island criminology researcher Megan Perry about the implications of these citizen recordings of video of police work. What insights have you gained by watching such videos? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Megan Perry here on the Ideas Network. Here with us as we discuss the implications of cell phone video of police encounters this hour on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the wake of protests sparked by the death of George Floyd, video footage has been used to document instances where protesters have been attacked and had their rights violated. Do you think recording police provides protection for those interacting with law enforcement? Did you watch the video of George Floyd's death? What effect did watching it have on you? Join in 800-642-1234. Megan Perry is an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where she studies policing, and she stays with us. Megan, we heard from Katie in Wausau, who couldn't stay with us, but Katie wanted to make the point that videos can be edited, they can be manipulated, and that it's important, Katie says, to bear that in mind. For instance, are you always seeing the entire video or just a clip?
I think that's a really important point. We edit just naturally when we decide to take a film, to record anything, when we decide to start filming, when we decide to stop filming. And then if you have a particularly long film, you're going to most likely edit that down to show the important, what you think is the most important part. I mean, even the Rodney King incident film was about 8 minutes long, and we saw between 15 seconds to about a minute and a half get replayed on the news. So we're missing quite a bit from that. Body-worn camera footage often gets edited as well, for a variety of reasons, victim protection, safety, protecting those around. They might blur people out as well. So asking for anything, what was the whole encounter? What is missing? And is it possible to find the whole encounter somewhere?
So really looking for that raw, unedited footage. Are there cases where context doesn't matter if it has been edited out or something important has been cut out of that video?
Absolutely. There are times where you don't really need to know what happened before, what happened, what was said, when there's clear cases of just sort of violations of civil rights, violations of this is particularly around use of force. It doesn't matter what happened before, what was said before, if the officer is then violating policy and use of force continuums and violating constitutional rights. There isn't anything that can happen before that will make those things okay.
You know, why do so many people watch these video encounters with police? Why do they go viral?
You know, I think, it has to do with the fact that we're fascinated by the police. And I think we're fascinated by the police because not very many of us actually have interactions with the police. Very few of us have regular interactions. Most of our interactions tend to be with when we get pulled over for traffic violations or something like that, or we're reporting a crime. So this is outside of what most of us experience.
So they're novel. I would assume, too, if they're friends and peers on social media or even at work are talking about a particular video, there is that interest in finding out what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And then a lot of these are really visceral, very dramatic violence. And not that we want to see violence, but I think we're sort of fascinated by violence as well. And it's upsetting and alarming. And even though it's upsetting and alarming, we watch those things.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Megan Perry, an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island. She researches the effects of watching police-citizen encounters through video recordings. Do you share videos online or on social media of police encounters that other people have posted? What insights have you gained by watching videos others have recorded of police? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Let's bring in Danny now, who's joining us from Harpers Ferry, Iowa. Hi, Danny.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
I just was curious how with so many police interactions being recorded by cell phones, why is it that so many police are getting away with murder when they're killing an innocent, unarmed person that's getting recorded and shared to the world? Thank you.
Danny, thanks. You know, with the pervasiveness of cell phones, everyone has one on them, Megan. What are the implications of that for police who are doing their job? And sometimes bad police are not doing their job well at all, or in this case of George Floyd, leading to his death.
Well, I think for the officers who are doing their jobs, it paints a picture of that all police are behaving inappropriately. And from what we estimate, what we can estimate is that it's very few individuals who are police officers who are engaging in serious misconduct. So serious misconduct, meaning criminal or, you know, career ending potentially. So that's around 2%. But when these are the videos that we're seeing, we get this feeling that this must be happening all the time, everywhere. As to the question about why individuals aren't charged, why they might not be held accountable for things, it has to do with departmental policy and qualified immunity, how officers are allowed to sort of behave. And if they were in fear of their lives at the time, they are allowed to respond accordingly. So that it's complicated with how the law and how policy interact for police. And when we see these things, it's upsetting. But they're held to this, what's called a reasonableness standard, and what a reasonable officer would do in that situation, not what we can see from all of that we know that this person is unarmed and we know that this person did X, Y, or Z. They might not have known that at the time. And so they're held to that moment in time and what another officer might do, and whether or not that needs to be rethought and the law needs to be, reconsidered is up to the public, I suppose.
Megan Perry, with the rise of cell phones and the proliferation of having one with you, have police body cameras followed a similar trajectory of police departments having their officers wear body cams?
Sort of, yes. There, after some the Ferguson in particular, there was a real call to have body cams as well. And to have that it almost allows the ability to share the narrative that police officers had lost. They lost control of their narrative when all of these cell phones kind of started being able to be used. So they offer that opportunity to counter that, but oftentimes they're not being shared. There's a variety of laws throughout the country that actually prevent citizens from finding and viewing body-worn camera footage. So when they're used transparently, when they're used in that same manner, when they're sharing both the good footage and the bad footage, I think it is on par with cell phone videos. Absolutely.
What have the effects been of these videos on the Black Lives Matter movement and the protests that we've seen across the country?
I think that these videos have really helped spread the word in terms of these videos allow white America to see what Black Americans have been saying for years and years about how they've been treated and the treated with suspicion, treated harshly, harassed, treated with disrespect, and subject to more physical abuse. And I think that was difficult for a lot of folks who don't have that experience to wrap their head around. well, you must have done something wrong. That I've interacted with the police and they've never done that to me. You know, and so it's difficult to find where people, you know, to really connect with that point. But here we have these videos and we can see and hear what they're talking about and see and hear these interactions. Be like, that person didn't do anything wrong, and yet they're being yelled at. That person didn't do anything wrong, and yet, or wasn't resisting, and yet that officer is kneeling on their neck. So in terms of gaining support on that wide base, these videos are really helping the majority kind of connect with those experiences.
We're talking about Citizens Recording Police posting those encounters online with Megan Perry. She's an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island. What story can you share about taking video of a police incident? What did you do with that video? Did you post it on social media? Was it shared? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Megan Perry after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a heads up on our programming this week. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Democratic National Convention from Milwaukee, where it's a mix of virtual, some live events. We bring you up to speed. We recap tonight through tomorrow night, starting at 8. That's right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about cell phone video, what it means to document police encounters in America. It's not just eyewitnesses. The press also capture footage. There have been more than 700 cases of police aggression toward journalists during the nationwide Black Lives Matter protest. That's from the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker. Do you think recording police provides protections in interactions with law enforcement, or does it escalate a situation? Should people document police on the job? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Megan Perry is an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, and she's our guide. Megan, we heard from Jeff in the Fox Cities, couldn't stay with us on the line, but Jeff called in to ask, why hasn't anyone been talking about the police body cam footage of George Floyd's death? Jeff hasn't seen it covered in the media. And I can say that it has just been in recent days that there has been court-released body cam footage. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I think in terms of why it hasn't been talked about, it wasn't released as at the same time as the other footage that we saw. So we got kind of our public hooks into that first, the bystander videos. And so it's late coming to the story, especially. I also think that we're not watching it as much because it's not as powerful, I think, visceral as those 8 minutes of watching him on the ground.
Why might having body cam footage from an officer's perspective do for them when they're being recorded by citizens?
Can you say that again?
I mean, from an officer's standpoint, and you're saying that we saw the bystander video, you know, much, much sooner. It came out, you know, almost immediately. And now, you know, police body cam footage, the actual police body cam footage is coming out, you know, months later. Does that have any influence on how might police respond to wearing body cams and what they think about having body cams on them?
Well, when it's released in a timely manner, I think it can help. It can help give a wider picture of what was going on, why things were happening, as well as there's just perspective of what you see from across the street versus what you see close up is going to change. And so that might change some of that narrative. We might see that influencing the overall media story, the outrage and things like that. We might have a more nuanced view, but we're not seeing those videos being sent out in a timely fashion at all. And because of that, they've already lost control of that story. They've lost control of that narrative.
What led you to study these citizen recordings of police? What led you down this path?
Well, originally I had a background in theater. And so I have always been very interested in the power of the arts and theater and entertainment to influence perceptions and feelings and things like that. And then I started in my PhD program. And of course, people started sending me stories and videos. I'm studying criminology at this point, with a bit of a diversion from theater. And I would see these videos. And because I was studying police, I could rationalize why something happened. I could explain, well, the reason why this person took this action was because X, Y, or Z. And so while I was disappointed in some of the officers that I saw, where I was kind of, I would get frustrated or angry a little bit, it wasn't this kind of explosive anger. And then one day somebody sent me a video of a police officer abusing their canine partner. And I couldn't rationalize it. There's no anything I could wrap my head around why somebody might do that. And I found myself getting angry 0 to 60, very, very, you know, it was just like kind of explosive in terms of my visceral feelings towards the encounter. And then I started thinking, if someone who has been studying police and studying policy and studying interactions was getting that angry that quickly about something, what was this doing for other folk who don't study this on a day-to-day basis? And so that was really that, combining that power of media to impact, and then also what those short 15-second videos can do to a person.
What can they do to a person? How do they change us when we watch them?
Well, sure. Well, just in terms of perceptions, they change our perceptions about the police. If we view more positive videos, police behaving respectfully, professionally, those types of things, they're going to decrease our estimations of police misconduct. We're going to have more trust in the police. We have increased support of the police. We're more likely to agree with them and believe and trust what they're saying. When we see negative videos, whether that is a negative verbal encounter where an officer might be swearing or yelling, something like that, or a use of force encounter, whether that is a proper use of force encounter or a excessive use of force encounter, any type of violence can be considered a negative sort of encounter, because how we respond to that violence. So those types of videos, when we see those, we end up feeling worse about the police. We have less trust, less support. We are less willing to cooperate with them, and cooperate meaning that we're going to tell them when there's been a crime. It is going to have high, we're going to have higher estimations of misconduct. We're less trustful of them. And it's going to increase our willingness to film the police in the future when we see those videos. I will say these videos on sort of a psychological and emotional level also can cause some issues. People who watch these videos, they can have a harmful impact on folks' psyches. So just when you're watching these videos, to kind of check in with yourself and make sure that, you know, you're engaging in some self-care, because these can be very difficult, very damaging videos to watch. I think they're important to see, but they can cause some emotional and psychological harm as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Megan Perry. She's an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where she researches the effects of watching police citizen encounters through video recordings. with your insights, your questions about these recordings. 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Clint now, who's driving through Wisconsin. Hi, Clint.
Hello.
Hi, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Obviously, the officer Chauvin, it was excessive use of force, and George Floyd never should have died. But I guess my question is, there was some leaked footage with the body cam, and he was resisting arrest originally. How come that part of never gets discussed, or doesn't seem to be getting discussed? That's all.
Clint, thanks. Megan, what about resisting arrest and the footage that shows?
Well, absolutely. We were just speaking about sort of, are those instances where we don't need any more context? And that's, yes, he was resisting, but once you've gained compliance, once you've gained control of that individual, that should be the end of it. So he was no longer resisting in at least the video, the bystander video. So that's the important piece in terms of like when we're judging that use of force. Was that person still resisting? Was that person a threat to the officer?
And when you're on the ground handcuffed, you're no longer a threat.
In the position that he was, that's not to say that people who are handcuffed cannot harm police, because they can still represent a danger. But in that position, he doesn't appear to be, he didn't appear to be any harm or any threat of harm to the police.
Let's bring in Michael now in Hillsboro. Hi, Michael.
I'm enjoying your conversation, Ms. Perry. And I'm curious to know, with your research, if there's any statistics available wherein police violence is used, is there a statistic that indicates that it might be justified sometimes, as opposed to the unjustified police brutality you've been talking about?
I don't have the statistics off the top of my head. And also, what statistics we do have are estimates, because we don't keep track of that. But that's a good question. And I will say that the majority of police encounters are perfectly fine. They're benign encounters. The majority of arrests are arrests without the use of force. And the majority of the times where there's force used, from what we can estimate, again, is that these are proper uses of force. The issues, however, is when that force is excessive or unwarranted. But yes, it given the number of agencies, the number of officers, and the number of encounters that we have between citizens and police, the majority of them are proper, aren't illegal.
We're talking about citizen footage of police encounters, what that means for the future of policing in America. Megan Perry studies this as an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island. Did you watch the video of George Floyd's death? Did you think bystanders should take their cameras out and record? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Megan Perry. She studies the effects of watching police citizen encounters through video recordings, teaches at the University of Rhode Island. We're learning about the rights citizens and the press have to record and publish videos of police activities, what the effect of these videos have on our society, especially amid calls for police reform and accountability. Let's take another call. Now, David is joining us from Oshkosh this morning. Hi, David.
Hi, Magna. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to touch on about the police being justified in their accounts. And there, while we don't keep great statistics of it, there are some statistics that we do know. Like when cops go to court for these kinds of charges, they are found justified 97% of the time. They have a 3% conviction rate. And the bigger problem is a lot of these investigations are done internally. They're the ones investigating themselves. So of course they're found justified most of the time. I think the bigger problem is the system itself rather than whether or not they're found justified, but how they're looking into the justification.
David, thanks. Megan, what do you see about that and how police are treated in the justice system?
Well, the police are definitely given the benefit of the doubt more often than probably necessary or needed. As he was saying, that in terms of conviction rates and things like that, it is rare that we see charges being brought up against officers. It is rare that we see much in the way of discipline even. But again, with these videos that are being shared and public outrage and protests and movements to change laws and other things, we're seeing more of that sort of start to change. And this has been a very recent development that we're starting to see these changes happening. Also, when it comes down to those court cases, if, you know, we've got a jury sitting there deliberating against, you know, thinking about whether or not a police officer was in the wrong, we are socialized to believe police officers. We are socialized to see and take their word for when something has happened. So that contributes to that conviction rate, as well as investigating themselves and following what the policy was and how the DA handles the case. All of those things kind of come together.
I want to circle back to earlier in our conversation talking about the fact that citizens have the right to shoot the video, First Amendment right, and how that right is being perhaps infringed upon. There's a couple of situations. Back in 2012, there was the case of Simon Gilk, who was arrested for recording the Boston police. What happened in that case?
Yeah, he was in a park and very openly filming, which was kind of key at that time as well, but openly filming the police and their encounter with another citizen, another civilian, and that he was arrested for violating wiretapping laws. So that kind of sparked that movement of like, wait a minute, we're allowed to do this. We're out in public. Do the police actually have that expectation of privacy when they are public servants out in public, you know, completing their jobs? And the court ultimately ruled that they didn't have that. And we've seen some sort of expanding in on that in terms of, are you allowed to record covertly? You know, if you put your phone in your pocket and it's no longer visible as it was before, is that still allowed? And for the most part, that they've held that is still allowed. There has been, like I said, pushback about those wiretapping laws, though. But by and large, most of the courts have been coming down on the side of the citizens and their right to film.
Moving fast forward to the Black Lives Matter protests, you know, we watched a CNN crew get arrested right there with their camera rolling in Minneapolis. What do you make of that encounter and that footage?
You know, I was dumbfounded. I don't really have any like thoughtful response to that. That was completely beyond the pale. I'd never seen anything like that. I never thought I would see anything like that. That deserves some intensive scrutiny through research and what the officers were thinking at that moment, in terms of, you know, the press are allowed to be in certain places and record and report. And to infringe on that just so blatantly was just astounding.
We're talking with Megan Perry, an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where she researches the effects of watching police-citizen encounters through video recordings. Megan, what does the future hold for these recordings and how people document police encounters? Where are we going?
I think we're only going to see more of it, honestly. Technology keeps improving. It gets more portable. It gets more finely tuned. And the data storage availability and our ability to go live is just improving by leaps and bounds. And so the more that we see these incidents being filmed, such as all of those incidents of the that were filmed in the protests and whatnot, we're going to see people kind of see those and be more willing to film in the future. We're going to see more involvement from citizens, from civilians, being willing to get involved from a distance, hopefully.
You mentioned data storage, and that has been mm-hmm. a huge issue among police departments and officers wearing body cams, and how long that footage is stored, how it gets stored, and the funding to store it. What do you see there?
The data storage issue is the most expensive part of body-worn cameras. The equipment itself is not nearly as expensive. It really has to do with the data storage. That changes from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, how long they're going to keep it, when they're allowed to keep something, who's allowed to view it, who's allowed access to it, how often it's viewed by the department even. Are those films, are those videos being reviewed by their superiors, by sergeants and lieutenants to make sure that things are going the way they should be. So all of that, until we find some more affordable ways of keeping that, I think we're going to see a lot of pushback from departments and ultimately like citizens, because we're not going to fund those budgets. But when part of those budgets involve body-worn cameras and the data storage for it, rather than hiring more police officers, you're going to have that conflict. But when it comes down to it, body-worn cameras haven't actually been shown to reduce use of force. There were some very early studies about body-worn cameras and use of force, but they haven't been replicated. So by and large, they haven't really impacted use of force incidents or misconduct, really. They do have a bit of an effect in decreasing complaints about officers, however. But again, that changes jurisdiction by jurisdiction. So are they actually useful? More than just, do we want to even store this data? Are they having any impact?
Megan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Megan Perry is an assistant professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island, where she is researching the effects of watching police citizen encounters through video recordings. Just ahead, it is On Point, the DNC Day 3. Who are the team of advisors and confidants who would influence a Biden presidency? On Point talks about the rising Democratic luminaries in the foreground and the lobbyists hovering in the background. That's On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.